Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
RandomChatter.com presents
Hydra's New World Order, Villarats.
Hail Hydra.
Perimeter Breach.
Agents of Hydra. Case File.
Authorizing. Access granted.
Hail Hydra.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agents of Hydra Case Files. I'm Agent Shepard.
And I'm Agent Stolte.
And you've been tasked to provide support on the most recent mission from Madam Hydra and her operatives, presented to the public as a dramatic hour-long television series known as Agents of Hydra. Your compliance will be duly noted in our report. You know, Josh, I've been having this weird, I don't know, I guess you call it like sense of deja vu, that this is really not how we've always done the show. Every time I say this stuff, it seems like there's was something else I used to say here, but I don't know. It's like right there, you know, it's like right on the tip of my tongue. I can't quite place it. So
I was listening to a story about that this week on the Bakshi report. Apparently you're supposed to just ignore it. That's just something that happens.
Oh, that's cool. That's good. So I mean, it's good to know that it's, you know, other people are experiencing this then.
Yeah, I was, but I started eating the soap and it went away really fast.
You were eating the soap? That's not really good. That probably is why you've been having those intestinal issues. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Well, I forgot everything I was thinking of before, so that it worked.
Cool. Well, hopefully you didn't forget too much and that we can still discuss this week's episode of Agents of Hydra.
That is absolutely the only thing I remember, actually.
Okay. So, all right. So why don't you tell us what we're going to cover this week?
We're going to be talking about all the Madam's men, which is hard to say. I had to practice that one. A little bit of a tongue twister.
It is a little bit, isn't it?
It reminded me of the old Disney movie, The Sword in the Stone.
Yes.
With, Mad Madam Mim. That's what it made me think of. But
yes.
All right. Well, no, but this was all the Madam's men, which was the 19th episode of season 14 and aired on April 25th of 2017, written by James C. Oliver and Sharla Oliver. I bet you they know each other a little bit.
Yeah, we know them too. They were the ones that were working on that Slingshot webisode series that was around Christmas.
Well, congratulations to them. More on that later. It was directed by Billy Gearhart. And, you know, now that Quake is back, we're going to see some serious action, right? I mean, you knew that was coming.
Yeah.
She and May escape the clutches of Hydra and knock Madam Hydra out of a very high window, shattering her spine.
Boing, oing, oing, she bounces too.
And stayed incredibly together considering that height, but that's okay. Yeah, yeah. Fitz is understandably upset by this. And, you know, he vows to finish her looking glass project to help save her. Now, meanwhile, Coulson starts to organize S.H.I.E.L.D. now that Patriot's gone. And, you know, it appears that he can be a pretty wise leader, even if he was a high school teacher. I'm talking to you, Mr. Constantinople.
Uh-oh.
Sorry.
Look out.
Yeah.
You sure it's not Mr. Istanbul?
Who can tell? But Simmons and Tripp, they go looking for this machine that Hydra's building. You know, they got some valuable intel from Tripp's camera, right?
Mm-hmm.
They discover, though, that Ada's doing some of the work back in the real world, which is ultimately going to give her a real body and some actual choice. That's something that neither she nor the rebuilt Superior have right now. Well, Fitz Sr., he gets some intel by beating Radcliffe within an inch of his life. It better lead to something because Fitz Jr. will no longer tolerate failure.
Mein Führer!
And Coulson, he leads a team to the propaganda machine, Bakshi's news station, so that they can get the truth out of the people. Yeah, it seems to work, too. Not out of the people, but out to the people.
Ah.
They don't need to get the truth out of the people.
Yes.
People don't know the truth. Can't get anything out of them. No, they get the truth to the people, and it works pretty well. The citizens, they begin to rally around the good guys, but it may be too late because Madam Hydra is ready to go into the machine.
Sounds like a Pink Floyd track or something right there.
Kind of does, isn't it? I wonder if this episode would work well with like Pink Floyd's The Wall playing in the background.
Oh, yeah. The Wall or Dark Side of the Moon. So, you know what? Maybe we'll have to sync those up, see what happens.
Have to experiment that, yeah.
That would be pretty funny. Well, thank you for letting us know about that. And it is interesting that James C. Oliver and Charla Oliver wrote this episode, because we found out this week the Webby Awards were announced. This is how would you describe these? They're a series of internet awards that are, let's see, they were established in 1996 by the International Academy of Digital Arts and Sciences. And they have, just like Oscars and stuff like that, they have different categories.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Slingshot, the Slingshot series, the what was it? It was six episodes, I believe. Won a Webby for drama, long form, or series.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a pretty big deal, because, you know, that was about an hour long episode, and maybe it was like 45 minutes of S.H.I.E.L.D. that was done over these six episodes. So, congratulations.
Yeah, that is pretty impressive, actually, considering the amount of content that's out there on the web. And I know a lot of stuff gets looked at for these things, you know? So,
yeah.
It's kind of cool to see that something like this that really wasn't – to me, it didn't feel like it was really promoted all that much.
Right.
You know?
The fans, I think, knew about it, obviously.
Sure, sure.
But that's a really small part of the internet when you think about it.
Yeah. Well, congratulations to them. That's awesome.
Yeah, and considering all the cat videos and the videos of man getting hit in crotch by ball, you know, the fact that this can, you know, shine through all that noise.
Just barely.
Yeah. So this other piece of news I put in here because one of my friends came to me and he's like, I don't know if S.H.I.E.L.D.'s going to get renewed. And I'm like, well, what did you hear? And he said, Chloe Bennett just joined a TV series. And I'm like, what? That can't be. She didn't. He was just mistaken. Oh. But Chloe Bennett has joined the remake of the 1983 film Valley Girl, which starred Nicolas Cage as not the Valley Girl. He was actually I think he was kind of a mod or a punk. I can't remember what his style was, but basically he was not Val. It was very Romeo and Juliet, and he was not a Val. And so,
they're doing a remake of Valley Girl. Is this a period piece? Is it going to be set in 1983? Because otherwise, the movie really doesn't.
Well, yeah, the movie. Yeah, I don't think you could update it to today, but it's also going to be a musical. So the original film. It was not what you would consider a traditional musical. It is wall-to-wall, jam-packed with what are probably now considered like hits from the era.
the oldies?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, it was stuff I didn't know at the time, but of course now is, you know, everybody knows these songs.
Right.
But it's like a wall-to-wall soundtrack of hits from the time. But they're making the new one a musical, so it's... Instead of having like a soundtrack, they will actually be, you know, singing. I don't know if Chloe Bennett's going to be singing in this or not.
Chloe Bennett used to be a singer, didn't she? Wasn't
right.
she a pretty big singer in Japan?
China.
China, okay.
It's very close.
Well, I was remembering from like 5 years ago. I don't
know. Yeah. No, I mean, I know she's a singer, but I you know, I didn't know, like, I don't know what her role is. They just announced the, the actors in it. And she is not one of the two starring roles, which means she is not the Valley Girl and she is not the Nicolas Cage character. So she could be the adorable friend, or she could be the evil enemy that hates the Valley Girl at the party, you know, for coming in with the guy that doesn't belong here in the Valley because he's from Hollywood or West Hollywood or wherever he is. So,
well, either way, it's going to be totally tubular.
And, but so again, Chloe Bennett is doing this, but it's like, you know, it will be a movie she makes over summer hiatus. So it doesn't necessarily conflict with anything that she may be doing if they do another season of S.H.I.E.L.D. And, still, we don't know what's going to happen with that. And boy, I put way too much time into explaining this piece of news. I'm just realizing. So, with that, let's get on to talking about all the Madam's men. So, I have to make one little side trip here. There is an area of Washington, D.C. called Adams Morgan, and there's a very famous bar there called Madam's Organ. And so, of course, whenever I see the word madam like that, it makes me think of this bar, but neither here nor there.
It's not as family-friendly as what it made me think of.
Right. So, but that's not where the title comes from.
No.
Not at all. So the title comes from, as many people might have guessed, the Robert Redford, Dustin Hoffman film from the early 70s called All the President's Men, which was a movie about two reporters, Woodward and Bernstein, who worked for the Washington Post, and they uncovered the scandal in the Nixon administration, the cover-up with the Watergate tapings and everything like that. And they let the public know and kept working on this, ultimately resulting in his resignation. If you've never seen the original movie, I watched it again about 2 months ago because I was going through kind of a political thriller, Jones here at the beginning of the year.
Oh, that's definitely a good one for it.
Yeah, and it's great. I mean, you know, it really takes, I mean, I don't think the real news was quite as salacious as this, but they really make it feel like these characters are in danger. And to some degree they were putting their lives on the line to an extent, but they were really putting their careers on the line, reporting this stuff because nobody believed the stuff that was going on. And these guys were like digging and they're like, I think we got something. And even the editors were like, I don't think we can print this stuff. This is just too out there. And
yeah,
it's very much like what's going on in this, in these episodes. You've got, it's a mix. It's the difference between the lies told by, Bakshi TV and Hydra and everything like that. And the real world. But it's also the lies that Hydra tells and what's really going on in the framework with the, with Hydra, and then the difference between the real world and the framework. And you know, who's believing what's going on and everything like that. I thought this was, I thought it was an interesting, connection that they made, by using this style of title.
Yeah, I did too. Now, and as far as the movie, All the President's Men go, I mean, if you like anything about history and just amazing cinema, you know, movie going experience, I definitely recommend that movie because it's fascinating. I think the Smithsonian or the government or somebody that put it actually in the historical archives as something of important historical significance or something, if I remember right.
Yeah, it's been the Smithsonian and the Library of Congress have earmarked it as one of every year they pick several films that are of historical and artistic value that they preserve. That means they make sure they get all the negatives and everything like that so that it can be kept as is and best possible condition. And yeah,
they put it on the ark when the big asteroid comes, right? Is that how
correct?
Strangely enough, I think Valley Girl is also in those same archives, but
it is a film of its time. It will tell you what it was like to be alive in the San Fernando Valley in 1983, which can tell you was what it was like.
and what it's like to be Nicolas Cage every day. But I thought this, you know, this one was not so much of a political intrigue episode overall, but it had some of that stuff, and it had, Coulson going on the air and sharing with everybody the footage from May's body cam and the, you know, evidence that they had uncovered, and so it was very much revealing to the citizens of the framework, or whatever you call the citizens of the framework.
Right.
What do they call the citizens of Sim City? Sims. Hey,
Sims. I guess. Yeah. What are the odds of that?
So I think that's kind of the connection there. So
I thought it was also interesting that they have this, you know, body camera footage. To date, you know, anything that we ever see off of like police cars or, you know, or body cams are either, you know, they're silly or they are the police person not, you know, doing what they should be doing.
Oh,
you know,
right.
It's the
basically
stuff
everything we
caught.
See could be played with the Benny Hill soundtrack playing in the background and it would fit.
Well, for some of it, yeah, and other stuff is probably, you know, and then there's the you know, the things where it's like, well, they had a body camera, but they turned it off or whatever. But it's something that's been in the news a lot in the last 2 to 3 years, I guess, talking about, you know, police departments having to get these and everything like that. I know the Baltimore Police Department has been undergoing training as they are being outfitted with body cams and stuff. And the way that element of our society plays into the story that they're trying to tell here in the framework, there are lots of these little things that have been in the news, pieces of technology or sound bites or, you know, the language that the different political parties use, and the producers and writers here kind of taken it all and jumble it up inside their blender called the framework and created something that is wholly different than what we live in, but very eerily familiar. It's just got these little things that were, it's really making, at least me, it's making me think, it's like, well, why are they choosing this?
You they've know? Put these characters in situations that, this is going to sound silly to say, but they're situations that would have realistic consequences. And I know we've got, you know, like super powered people in the show and that in humans and things like that. But the things that they've been doing, especially in the framework, make logical sense on a timeline that these characters would make this decision and it would lead them down this path. And what is unsettling about it is that we know these characters to be good people. And yet it just took one little thing to turn them to make these decisions, but it still feels like it could happen. And I think what makes it so unsettling and makes you kind of think about it is, wow, you know, what in my life could have been different to send me down that path? Because it could just take one thing. And I think that's what makes it so, I don't want to say hard to watch, because it's really intriguing. I mean, I'm fascinated by it. I don't want to stop watching it, but at the same kind, it kind of makes me uncomfortable thinking about myself like that.
I don't know that I'm even getting to that self-reflexive point where I'm looking at it myself. It just makes me kind of uncomfortable in general. And through a number of ways, through the content, through the way it's filmed, their use of filters, like I think we talked about that last week, right? The way that the framework is actually very desaturated. I'm also noticing lots of, you know, they do the kind of the comic book canted angles. This week was the one that was I really noticed that was weird. When they go in to see Radcliffe, when Alistair Fitz goes in to see Radcliffe, Radcliffe's got his face down on the table, but the next shot, it looks like his head is vertical in the frame, and it looks like he's up against a wall, but that's the table, and they've just turned the camera like 90 degrees. And then he keeps then Alistair Fitz blocks out the frame, except for just a little area between his elbow and his chest that we're looking through. And that's where we see Radcliffe, just very small in the frame, dominated by this hulking authority figure. You know, stuff like that. You know, the fact that you could be, you know, I hate movies where people are wrongfully accused and held against their will. And, you know, they have no way to prove that what they are saying is the truth. There's an old Hitchcock film with Henry Fonda, I think, called An Innocent Man. And it opens with this guy getting caught for something, but you know he didn't do it. You see what he's been doing, but he can't explain that he has no good alibi. And it's him in jail, and everything he tries, you know, the police, nobody believes him, and he's trying to get a lawyer, and nobody will talk to him, nobody will listen to him. Those things just scare the hell out of me for whatever reason. And
because it does in real life. It's a fear in real life that we see, and that goes back to what you were saying before about how what we're seeing in the framework is unsettling, because you know there's certain aspects of this that we are seeing in our world right now, and if the things in our world head in the same direction as they are in the framework, that's a really scary thought.
And like you said, it's just that one little choice. It's not, you know, aliens have invaded and we've got laser guns and we've got to protect ourselves. That doesn't really scare me, because the probability of that happening is you know, high. It's not high.
Yeah, that's what they want you to think.
They probably.
I you get that aluminum foil ready, I'm telling you.
You've been probed one too many times, I can tell. But you know, the chances of, you know, parts of our society becoming a police state, I feel like we're closer to getting to that than other places. So, very good job portraying this alternate world that, like you said, feels right, but just something is off in it. Now, at this point, I want to normally we save all of our feedback towards the end of the episode, but this was a question we got between the last two episodes from Qui-Gon Tim, and I wanted to put it in here because I thought it was it really made me think when we got it in. The majority of the question, I believe, was really addressed by this week's episode, but I want to talk about this a little bit more. He says, assuming that the consciousness of Ada is the same in the real world and the framework, why do you guys think she allowed Mace to persist in the framework when she could have just pulled the plug in real life? And that was, I thought that was really intriguing because, you know, that's what we saw it play out. But this week we find out that Ada and, to an extent, the superior, because she manufactured him, she has to adhere to her basic tenets and the basic rule in her in her programming is she will not kill humans, or, you know, or at least,
is it just humans or is it shield agents?
It might be just these agents, or it might be.
I was just curious. I couldn't remember what Radcliffe had programmed in her.
Right. So that's you know, that's the main reason why. But
now she said something about them being a threat. So do you think, despite how much Mace was fighting back and acting as the Patriot, that despite all that, he wasn't ever really a threat to the framework?
Because he was under her control in that room and her programming, I don't think she ever saw him as a threat. The only people she said were a threat in this episode were Daisy and Simmons. Okay. And because, you know, they are basically the invading bodies, right? You know, that her white blood cells have to go out and combat the
Ooh, that's a good analogy.
The Hydra agents that are going out to kill them and everything like that.
Because she has no control over their consciousness, I suppose.
Right. And she's reprogrammed everybody else, but we'll get into this in a little bit. The as she mentions, the true natures of these characters are resurfacing through the programming, like which is really interesting. I don't want to get into that right now because there's a lot of stuff I want to talk about there. But okay. I did want to talk about Ada's plan, because this whole thing where she's not allowed to kill anybody, and as you mentioned up in the brief, she's looking to, you know, get a real body and be able to make choices, to make decisions. Right now, she can make decisions to a degree, but she is still under the control of her core programming. Now, when you if you want to break this down onto kind of like a psychological level, I think everybody has a set of core programming. It's, you know, it's, I would consider that probably your values, you know, how you were raised, the things that you believe, your tenets, that kind of stuff. And those things that those core beliefs, values, tenets, whatever they are what keep you from doing certain things or allow you to do certain things. Right. You know, if it's not moral for you to smoke or something like that, then you don't do that. But other people, they don't have that same belief and that's what they enjoy. So they do. That make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I thought you were going to light up a cigarette.
I never thought about it like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we are all. And I think this is probably what the show may be trying to say. I mean, we are all victims of the world that we live in, and we have, you know, there is things that have control over us. However much we like to think we are, you know, independent entities and stuff like that, there are lots of things that hold sway over us. I think about, I don't know, small little black devices that we hold in our hands and stare at constantly. I mean, you know, that may own you more than you own it.
Hold on a second. Let me tweet what you just said. That was good.
Okay. That was good. Yeah. I'm going to tweet that. So her plan apparently is, they're going to build this device, which is very much like the, machines that she built from the Darkhold, I'm guessing to build the virtual brain that we saw her stitching together, and also very similar to the device that they used to free Fitz and Coulson from the ghost dimension, the Ghost Rider dimension.
Right.
And by using these machines and stuff, she's going to teleport herself or take the consciousness of herself out of the framework and put herself in a real body. And by the magic of that transmuting her from a digital entity into a physical entity, she will then lose, or she thinks she will lose, the control that Radcliffe has put in place to keep himself and others safe, right? Like the,
sure.
No killing.
Okay. No, hold on. A couple things. Okay. First of all, it's not magic. Okay. It's science. I'm just saying.
It's science from another dimension. Okay.
All right. Magical science. Fine. No. Now I had a question about this that I may have a theory of the answer, but I wanted to get your kind of take on it. So Ada gets like taken down in this. I mean, she's the, you know, Daisy shoots her out a window and
oh, yeah.
Okay.
That was awesome.
And sudden too. I didn't expect it. What I did expect is her to just kind of pop right back up and everything be okay.
I was waiting for her eyes to open up. Yeah.
She's in control of this world. She's got, you know, I mean, she knows everything, all the truth about everything. She didn't make it Hydra. I think, you know, May's choice made it Hydra and she just kind of took control over that.
Some of Coulson's choice, some of Fitz's choice, I think. Yeah. Okay.
Uh-huh. Okay. So my thought was, why didn't she just fix herself? You know, and this is her consciousness. Why doesn't she just fix herself
right
within the framework?
So,
do you have a thought on that?
I was kind of thinking about that a little bit, but then I just let it go. Okay, go ahead.
You go ahead. You tell me what you were thinking.
Okay. Well, it was that I just thought that she was a victim of the rules that she put in place, or that, let's say, Radcliffe really and Fitz. I mean, they wrote the framework, so there are rules for the framework as well as for her. And so she's kind of constricted by those rules. And the rules say if you die in the framework, you die in real life. Well, she came as close as she probably would to dying if she was a human, but she's not a human. She's a robot, an android. So she was able to extricate herself. And as she said to the superior, she had to reboot or recalculate, something like that. And And that's why she just didn't, you know, she wasn't able to rework herself. And from where they are, maybe she can't reprogram the, at the, you know, in this oil platform or whatever it is, maybe she can't reprogram the framework from there. And
right.
She's busy working on this other stuff anyway. So she, it probably doesn't make that much of a difference to her because she figures they're going to be out soon.
Well, my couple thoughts of that. First of all, I didn't realize that she had to plug herself in the real world in order for her to be in the framework, or if even that is the case. But that's what it seemed like in this episode.
That is what it seemed like, yeah. And we've talked about that, whether or not she was existing in both places at the same time.
Yeah, like a copy of herself.
A copy, mm-hmm.
Now, then the other thing is, like what you said, she's sort of restricted by the rules of the framework. And if we remember kind of thinking back to earlier in the season, when every time May would kind of crack the puzzle, you know, she would realize that she wasn't where she was supposed to be, uh-huh. and she would escape.
Right.
They would have to take her out of the framework, reprogram the framework, and then put her back in. So I'm right. thinking that's part of the reason as well. That's also part of the reason that she has left these, you know, the team plugged in. She can't kill them. Obviously, she can't just kill them, but she can't just remove them from the framework because it's sort of running its program and you have to kind of let it run its course. You can be disconnected if you do it appropriately, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's why I think she is not able to repair. She doesn't. She's not all powerful in this thing. She is the she's just another extra person plugged into it, which leads me to believe what you said last week, that she is the back door. She is their way out of there.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. I just, some of that stuff pointed to evidence that supported that idea and also changed my view of what the framework really is.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I hadn't really continued thinking too much about the, you know, what is the framework this week. I was more following along with the character story. So that's interesting. So I was thinking about this, you know, with the way that she's planning on escaping and everything like that. And I was like, well, you know, what's the worst that could happen? And initially I wrote that snarky. But I'm actually serious. If Ada manages to rewrite herself out, she's writing it based on what they're saying in this episode, is she's found a way to produce human tissue and flesh and stuff. So she's going to take herself from being a mechanical construct with a digital, brain, and she's going to put that digital the digital thoughts and everything, and implant that into a physical living, breathing host. She won't have the strength that she used to have. I mean, she's just going to be a human.
Why
like
not?
Everybody else.
Why not? Why couldn't she design the body any way she wants? Maybe even give it inhuman characteristics. Why couldn't she just design and build that body to give it any characteristics? Same thing with the superior. You know, I mean, he's looking forward to having his free will back.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if that's a possibility or not, but that's one thing that
I hadn't even really considered that. I mean, there's only one way to put a body together, right? I mean, it's...
Well, I've only done it one way,
two.
But you know.
Yeah, two, I guess. Okay. Well, anyway, that being said, I was thinking it'll be one of those things where she thinks that she's done something great, and then, you know, now she's a weakling. And
that's kind of how John Garrett died, isn't it?
Yeah.
He was
yeah,
yes.
Very similar.
Yeah, oh, just blew him away. That was
But what I was also thinking, this was kind of alluded to very, very tangentially by Daisy when she said, "We can get out of here." And Ward says, "Well, by we, I don't think you mean me." But we could get a chance for another character to emerge from the framework. Isn't that possible? We could get Ward or Trip or Radcliffe out of the framework with this technology then.
Or another Agent Koenig. Come on.
Or another Agent Koenig if we haven't seen one inside the framework, but I'm sure there's got to be several.
Yeah. Thank you for making me see that I'm not the only one that was hopeful that that could happen.
I've seen some chatter online about this. There are a number of people that were thinking this as well.
How would you feel? I first of all, I would love if Trip came back. I think Radcliffe has been a very interesting character, although I'm not sure what else they could do with him. But I thought that last season too, and look what they did.
Yeah.
So I would not mind seeing him at all. But how would you feel about Ward? How would you feel if he came back on the show as a character and he was a good guy?
This is a very divisive character because there are people that love him and there are people that hate him, and I've seen people that would hate to have him come back. They're already sick of him showing up, but I think that Brett Dalton has done such a good job on this show. I would be interested to see what else they could do with this character and what else Brett Dalton could do with it as an actor. And it would almost, if they were to do another season and he was back as this weird kind of, Ward, but not Ward. The Ward that's in the framework he's very empathetic. He's very understanding. He is really smart. At one point at the end, he says, in speaking about the real Ward in the real world, it's like, did they arrest him? And she kind of just looks at him and he's like, oh, the other thing. It's just that weird.
It's who Ward would have been if he hadn't been brainwashed and manipulated by John Garrett.
By John Garrett, right? Exactly. He was he had been arrested, or he was in a home because of arson, or maybe he was arrested. I can't remember what he had said, but I think he said he was doing time.
Yeah, I think the same childhood played out. He still burned his parents' house down,
mm-hmm. But he was saved by Agent Hand. From S.H.I.E.L.D. instead of John Garrett from Hydra, because, of course, flip-flopped the storyline there. So
I would be okay if he came back. I think that would give so many characters so many dramatic things that they could do and deal with that it would be kind of a fun way to continue on that. Plus, you got to find a way to get him back every season. So,
right. As much as I love Trip on the show, in season two, I'm finding I enjoy having him here, but he's not fulfilling the same level of excitement that he did for me in season two, because I think I've really grown to love Mac as a character, and he's filled that hole left by Trip, just as the kind of snarky, funny character.
Maybe
Mac's very more protective, I think, than Trip was and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. Trip. He, I think he's got some potential. I'd be totally okay with it. But I know what you're saying. I noticed that this week as well, actually.
So, touched on this earlier then, where Madame Hydra talks about how the characters' true natures are being revealed. And so no matter how much brainwashing or reprogramming Ada does in the framework, on the template for these characters, and takes away their regret, digitally or whatever. The core character trait of these people still comes through, and she starts going down the list. So I'd like to kind of go over our main characters here and just see what we've got. So she starts out with May. She calls May the warrior, which is true. May is going to be so tired when she gets out of here, because basically May has been fighting nonstop, pretty much like two thirds of the season now in the framework, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's when they captured her.
Yeah, since the beginning, pretty much the beginning of the LMD arc there, I think.
And her body has not, her physical body has not been doing anything for that period of time.
Yeah, that's true. I doubt they will deal with the atrophy of the body, but that there could be some an interesting episode where they have to deal with consequences like that. Should they continue on? And the other thing that I thought was really interesting is that May gave up the regret of having killed the little girl in Bahrain. And of course that caused everything to play out differently in the framework world, but she never had that regret. But now that regret has resurfaced, but with a new face. And this time it's Jeffrey Mace, which is someone she knows. So the regret is actually, in my opinion, I think the regret is actually stronger than it was with this girl. Like, she killed this little girl and she felt bad about that because it's a girl, a little girl, and, there's innocence and stuff there. And now it's someone that she knows.
Well, not only that, but not having killed that girl ended up killing more people. And I think she still has that too. But yeah, I like the idea of kind of comparing it to letting Mace die.
And it seems like for a number of these characters, the removal of their regret it was not really a removal. It was more of a postponement of the regret. That regret, whatever it is, seems to come back up. Even if you go to like Fitz, at least last week a little bit, I think he felt like his dad just needed to go away.
And, oh yeah,
he's obviously not happy with that. Madam Hydra then goes and calls Mac the Protector, who I think he wholly stepped into the role this week. He really stepped up to the challenge of working with S.H.I.E.L.D. Was telling Hope, gave her instructions on stuff to do to help out S.H.I.E.L.D. and teach other kids how to fix radios and stuff like that. He's just kind of taking care of everybody, and he was about to take care of May permanently, but Coulson stepped in. Of course, he is the leader. Or Madam Hydra doesn't talk about Coulson in this, but that's obviously who he is. He's a big time leader. He can't help but share that hope and optimism and strength. That's the character that I saw in this episode is the character that we saw in the first couple episodes of the series. I think just this really strong, dynamic character that makes you like him and trust him, and you would do stuff to help him out.
And he even demonstrated that when he was talking to Ward, when Ward was anxious to kind of get out there and do something. And he didn't necessarily stop him. He
counseled him.
Yeah. Yeah. And kind of, made him think about his actions before he did them.
Right. And, the third person Madam Hydra talks about is of course the, Fitz, as the romantic, and of course, she has perverted that and twisted it so that she is the object of his desire, not Simmons.
I wonder how that played out. I mean, we'll never find that out, but just how, what led him to her, as opposed to, or how did she make him come to her? But
yeah, well, if he didn't end up going to the academy and was doing some stuff with his dad and getting involved with Hydra, who knows? There's all sorts of stuff there. The only other two characters that are here to talk about really are Daisy and Simmons. They weren't reprogrammed, so there's really no true nature for them to reveal. I did see you put down Daisy as the hero, obviously, which I think is a good character trait for her. I mean, that's yeah. really who she is in this.
It didn't get covered up, so it didn't have to be revealed, but she definitely – I think she demonstrated that, you know, just continuing to get beat up and never giving up until finally she was able to get her powers back and then still go out there and kick some butt and help. And she's always wanted to do that, even from those first episodes when we saw her in the van when she was hacking things, you know, and even back when she was just little Sky.
She got to hack again this episode, or yes, she was trying to hack, so couldn't quite hack it, but no. It was close. And then Simmons, I'm kind of torn on this one. I've got kind of two natures for her. One would be the brains.
That's what I was going to say, the intellectual.
Right, because she's – I mean, Fitz is smart, but she really works it out and kind of has the whole package there, the heart and the head. I would also say the optimist. She tends to be very positive. I mean, heck, she's come back from the dead several times and literally in the framework has come back from the dead. If that isn't optimism, I don't know what is, you know. Like, you ain't going to kill me. I'm just going to keep getting up. So I thought that was interesting to kind of boil these characters down to just one trait.
Oh, and it's again, interesting that all the traits are so different.
Right. Well, that's what makes a great team, too. You know, when you were watching G.I. Joe, that's why they had, you know, they had the leader, and then they had, you know, the heavy weapons specialist and the guy with the
professional
wolf.
Wrestler and
right.
Hell, the more
snakehead
you know,
dude. Yeah, the more you know. Also, I felt they really amped up the metaphors this week. You know, where you got to save the people, and we're going to save the world, and then in order to wake everyone up, we've got to go wake everyone up.
a little bit too on the nose for you.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's there's so much stuff going on here. I mean, there's a little bit of like They Live, the John Carpenter film where the aliens take over going on. We've got political thriller. We've got, you know, references to Real World.
You just needed Grant Ward to have some bubble gum. There you go.
that would have been pretty cool. The last two things I want to talk about here really quickly before we sign off are some of the technical things about the show. So I thought the use of the visual elements from the Ghost Rider arc that showed up in this episode were really cool. What I'm talking about is where you've got characters in the same location, but they're on different planes of existence. And we're in the same location, and, you know, one character is about to come around a corner and run into a second character, but one is in the framework world and the other one's in the real world. And it really showed us the use of the way that they've been using the color. What you had pointed out last week about how the desaturation of the framework works, and when we were back in the real world with Ada and the Superior and the other Hydra agents, was.
Yeah, I don't want to take credit for that. I was actually my daughter that pointed that out. So,
okay,
my 12-year-old daughter that pointed that out, not me. I don't want to take credit for it.
You were just like, I don't know. It's always kind of desaturated. My glaucoma is kind of getting bad and stuff like that. So,
what? What did you say?
Yeah. And I know we don't often talk stunts for this series. We do every now and again. But, wow. How about that opening stunt fight with May and Daisy? The flip that May does off the table and then she ends up, you know, lands on her feet and shoots the guy. I just want to know how many takes it took it took her to do that.
That was cool. That had one of those comic book camera angles you were talking about too, didn't it? Mm-hmm. When she was doing the flip.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we had the really, you know, awesome shot of Madame Hydra getting blasted out the window and the camera zooms out and follows her down. There were a couple of those shots where camera went out or came back in, through the glass really adds a lot of atmosphere and epic quality, you know, to this show. I can't imagine that's cheap or easy to do, but they seem to know when to utilize the special effects and you know, give it that little extra punch there.
Looks great.
So, anything else about the episode that you wanted to touch on that we didn't get a chance to talk about there?
It has been really good to see some of the characters in this series that we didn't think we were going to get to see before. You know, we've been talking about Trip, Ward, of course, who we assumed we'd see at some point. But Bakshi, it was really kind of fun to see how they've been using him.
Yeah.
This framework storyline, the Hydra, whatever they're calling this little pod, I can't remember, but it has been maybe one of the most intense story arcs that I think they've had in this series. There's been a lot of really good ones, but this one has just been, it's made me think so much about different levels and layers of the story and of the mystery that this is some of the finest work that I think they've done on this series. I am really having a good time.
And while this is an arc they couldn't have done too much earlier than this season, just due to the fact that it relies so heavily on all the experiences that we've had with these characters over the 3.5 years and the backstories that we have learned about them. And because that's important, knowing that, you know, Ward's real backstory is important to getting enjoyment and understanding out of Ward's current backstory. Where is that difference? Where did that change come? And why is he different now than he was in the real world? So, this is one of those storylines and different episodes that we are getting now. It's those cool ones that you get later in the life as a series matures, where there's enough information about these characters that you can have references back to stuff that'll cause connections to happen, and your fans will, you know, yeah, say, oh, wow, that's really amazing how they did all this. So,
and we're seeing that in several of the shows that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
The Arrow has been doing that this season as well, very successfully. So I'm glad that these series have lasted this long to be able to do that. And with the few episodes they have left, there's so much to solve, so much to for the heroes to take care of. And I mean, I can't imagine a show that would have so many, because not only do they have to save this world and the framework from Hydra, which we already know is very, very difficult just in the Marvel universe alone, you know, and yeah, so they got to take down Hydra in this virtual framework. Plus they've got to get out of the framework, then find Ada or stop Ada and whatever she has planned to do, and hopefully not kill their bodies before they get there, and then stop her and save her from the real world. I mean, there's just all kinds of different goals that they have to get to. It's not like just one big MacGuffin that they're getting to at the end of this
season. Not just, we have to get out of here.
Right.
Once they get out of there, then there's still stuff they've got to do. So,
which to me, it makes it extra exciting. So I'm having so much fun watching this.
Yeah, we're just down to 3 episodes left. So, you know, hold on to your seats, because it's going to be a bumpy ride, as they say. Couple nice references I saw in there, besides the, as you mentioned, the return of Simon Cassandes as Sunil Bakshi, who I thought I had heard last week, which turns out that was the case. At the beginning of his first news segment at the beginning of the episode, there was a nice shout out to John Garrett, aka Bill Paxton, who, as you know, passed away just before this pod started up again. And it was an in memoriam for John Garrett, an American hero. So I thought that was a nice little tribute that they were able to put in the episode about that.
I'm glad they mentioned something there. Just, I mean, because it wasn't even necessary. They could have just gone on and it would have been fine, but I like that they just acknowledged it.
I can only imagine what they could have done with this arc if Bill Paxton hadn't passed away. You know, with him being in here as, you know, as a cohort to Alistair Fitz, you know, having brought in Ward or something like that, or having, you know, been, you know, a number two in charge or something like that. So, and then there was also the mention by Coulson of alternative facts, another buzz phrase, term that we're hearing a lot in news cycles and stuff currently in the real world right now, relating to different stories and what's true and what's not true. So, thought those were pretty cool. So I guess that's, I think that pretty much wraps it up for what we've got here in this week's episode of Agents of Hydra Case Files. I feel like pretty soon, we need to start really kind of busting out of this and maybe going back to, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, but, we're not quite there yet. Maybe soon.
No, not yet. But I've been having, you know, second thoughts about this, whether I'm doing the right thing or not.
Yeah. Hey, just eat some more soap.
Oh, good idea. Good idea. Thank you. But hey, you guys, if you haven't eaten your soap yet and you would like to give some feedback on iTunes for us, we would really enjoy that. Please get over there. Just write a nice comment so people can find us a little more easily. Or if you want to talk to us directly, we'd like that also. So just send us an email, hydra@randomchatter.com. That'll come straight to the framework, right to us. Or you can go visit us on Twitter at Agents Podcast. And of course, our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Agents Podcast.
And you can also check out our other shows that we do, Green Justice and Arrow Podcast and Scarlet Velocity of Flash Podcast, both which are returning from a 3 or 4 week hiatus this week. You can find them on randomchatter.com. All shows also are available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And if you enjoy the podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. We'd love for more people to join us each and every week. So for Agents of Hydra Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Bidding you hail Hydra.
This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.